This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik. The long, hard winter appears to be about over, so now's the time to start thinking about preparing your lawn and garden for the new season. Joining me are Campbell County Horticulture Extension agent David Kester and Peter Huttinger, with Neighborhood Garden Coordinator with the Civen Garden Center of Greater Cincinnati. If you have a question or a comment, call us at 513-419-7100 or email us talk at wvxu.org. You also can find us on Facebook and Twitter. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
So we've had this long, hard winter, and we're coming out of it. It's warm today. But what does that mean in terms of lawns and gardens? Is there anything different people need to be doing this year that they wouldn't have done any other spring?
I would probably give my plants a little bit longer. Just take a good, hard look at them before you decide that they're completely dead and they need to be taken out. I know we're going to have quite a bit of winter damage this year, but it's really a good idea to give your plants time and make sure that there's still a lot of root system underneath there, and let them bud out and come back. Because if you make the decision too soon that they're all dead, such as your roses or any other type of landscape plant, just give it some time and it may come back and you'll be surprised.
Peter?
Yeah, a hard winter is, in some ways, can be nature's way of pruning. So like Dave said, you know, hold off on that. But some things can die back very close to the crown and still come back. So, you know, be cautious. Also, it's warm today, but don't jump ahead too far in terms of early seed sowing. I mean, there are certain things like peas and beans that you can put in earlier, but don't go too far. And if you do go ahead and plant, you know, be sure to keep an eye on the weather and use row cover or straw mulches to protect young seedlings as they're coming up.
If it is too early to really do any planting right now, what should you be doing in your lawn and garden? I mean, people want, on a day like today, especially if it happens on a weekend, people want to get out there and do something. What should they be doing?
Well, cleanup is really a really needed thing, especially after a tough winter like we've had. A lot of limb breakage, things like that. You'll want to look at your plants, prune back a little bit some of the dead and broken limbs, and also clean up some of those beds that you've got. And, of course, I was amazed. I saw some research that says that more people improperly dispose of yard waste during the spring of the year than they do in the fall of the year. So all that material needs to go into a compost pile. And so let's, you know, get it cleaned up and don't throw it out for the trash, because it isn't trash. It's just a great soil amendment if we let it compost.
When you talk about that compost pile, what should it look like? If you're landlocked in a suburban neighborhood, where should you put it?
Well, that's a question that a lot of people have to answer for themselves, because they just can't make a big pile. On a farm, you have large windrows. So the Hamilton County Recycling every year has a sale of these. They call them earth machines. They're these plastic units that you can compost in, so it's completely contained. You can also build, these kind of containing boxes. Some people do 2 and 3 bin versions of them, so that the compost or your leaves and stuff are contained on 3 sides, so it becomes a visual screen.
So it doesn't make your property look as
messy. If you have a back section of the garden that's sort of shielded by shrubs and bushes, you can do a conventional pile. I always kind of refer to it as like a French baguette, you know, long row, and build it up into layers. And if you kind of keep it tidy and neat, it's not that big of an eyesore. And one thing at a lot of the community gardens, with the Civic Garden Center's community gardens program, we build these windrows and then we grow vining plants like butternut squash on top of them. And so that becomes a growing space. It shields them visually. And also the plants themselves create a part sun, part shade environment.
So but you can't keep piling on that compost pile once
you
plant
after, it. No, that's after you're finished.
Okay.
Yeah. And then you plant the plants at the base, around the base of the compost pile and soil, and then they grow up over it.
Our phone number is 513-419-7100 if you have a question or a comment today, and I encourage you to call early. A lot of folks tend to get in on the end of the show, and we don't have time to get to the calls. So get your calls in if you have a question or a comment. We're going to go first to Rebecca in Finneytown. Hi, Rebecca. What's your question?
Hello. I hope you're enjoying this gorgeous day.
Oh, we're inside right now.
Oh, gosh. You were just speaking of compost. I have a compost bin that was unheated over the winter, you know, it froze solid, and now it's thawed out, and I've been turning it and adding more waste, you know, kitchen waste to it. I just wondered if that was still good, or if there's a certain way I should treat it, or if I should just start mixing it into my garden soil.
Boy, it sounds like you've done everything right. It should be fine. We always say compost is ready to be used when you can't identify what you initially put into it. But I think in your case, I would certainly begin using it on your garden, and it should be just a great soil amendment.
Yeah,
even though it was frozen like a rock over
yeah.
the winter.
Well, that's good. That's part
okay,
of
great.
Yeah. That's kind of nature's way of helping it break down. And another thing, too, is depending on how your pile is set up, sometimes if you dig around underneath the pile on the bottom, you'll have more mm-hmm. mature compost that you can pull out, and then you can add new material into what's left and then start turning it again. And I think what Dave says, you don't recognize anything. But then another thing, too, is it should be, like, crumbly and shouldn't have any kind of strong, unpleasant odor. We always talk about it should have the sweet smell of soil.
Thanks, Rebecca. Our phone number is 513-419-7100. If you have a question about your lawn, your garden, your trees today, as you're talking about the compost bin, we have one in our backyard where we put all of our kitchen waste and leaves and that sort of stuff in there. We do it really more just to be not putting the stuff in the trash. We don't really use it very much for our soil. But one of the things that we have found is eggshells, which I've heard are really good in a compost bin, don't seem to compost very well. Do they belong in a compost bin?
Well, I think they belong in a compost bin. One thing you can do is just crumble them before you put them in. But, you know, they are hard, and they do take a long time to break down. But if you have totally finished compost and there's small flecks of eggshell, I really wouldn't worry about that.
So you could just use it that
sure.
way. Sure. Okay. And what about pineapple? We have found that the tops of pineapples don't seem to compost either.
It's a kind of a tough fibrous, and it, everything will compost that's organic, and it will eventually. But you know, the smaller the item going into the compost pile is, the quicker it's going to break down. So if you can cut that up a little bit before you apply it or put it into the pile, it will definitely rot.
So just do a little work beforehand, then.
Yes.
And those eggs, and I've heard limes are bad for compost. Is that true? Or
Some people don't recommend putting citrus in it, but I think what I would do is most people aren't putting, you know, I guess if you're juicing a dozen oranges a mm-hmm. day and you have a small pile, it could be a problem. But like Dave said, if you just cut it up and spread it throughout the pile, you're usually fine.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. We're talking about your lawns and your gardens and your trees with Campbell County Horticulture Extension Agent David Kester and Peter Huttinger, Neighborhood Garden Coordinator with the Civic Garden Center of Greater Cincinnati. Mark's calling from Glendale with a question. Hi, Mark.
Hi. This is going to be kind of a funky question, but I'm going to ask it. I lived in Vermont for 16 years, and there was a lot of talk about people that were back to nature using, you know, 5-gallon buckets, human excrement, throwing sawdust into it, letting it compost, adding it to your compost pile, and then, you know, putting it on your garden. Sounds a little funky to me. I'm really anxious to kind of hear what your answer to that is.
I'm anxious to hear, too. What do you guys say?
Well, I think he's referring to Jenkins' book, Humanure. And it's a system where you use a 5-gallon bucket, you put sawdust in it, then you can urinate and excrement into it, and then you cover it with sawdust over time. And then that's transferred to a larger pile and broken down. In the particular book, he says you can use it after a certain point in agriculture. Now, traditionally, a lot of our peppers, tomatoes, all our crops were fertilized with what was called night soil historically. But I certainly don't recommend it in this day and age. Now, I do know people that are living off the grid and do use that particular system of composting human waste, and it is effective. But none of them use it on food crops. So you can use that for, you know, ornamental shrubs and things like that. But, you know, and also they're usually letting it go for at least 2 years. And they're also integrating animal manure in with it to make sure that it meets the thing. And that's a situation when they talk about you mixing your greens and browns, your nitrogen and carbon. When you're processing human waste, you have to be super careful with that.
David, you want to?
Well, I just the same thing Peter said. I would avoid it for all food crops, and there are people who are doing it. They are thoroughly composting it for a minimum of 2 years, and we have a new regulation that we don't like to see people even using animal manures for at least 120 days before what they put it on in the fall of the year, they can plant into that garden in the spring of the year. But you want about 120 days to elapse if it isn't thoroughly composted material.
Our phone number, 513-419-7100. Mark's calling from Clifton. Hi, Mark.
Hi.
What's your question?
Well, we're starting raised beds in our home, and through my research, I found that there are so many different ideas and what the ratios of soil to compost, to peat moss, to potting soil, to what to fill them up with. And I'm just wondering what they suggest, to put them in, like the ratios of the soil and the compost. And I'll take my question off the air.
Okay, thanks.
You know, that's a great question, and honestly, I'm really careful when I fill my raised beds because I feel like I've only got one chance to do it right, and that's not really true. You can always come back and add better soil to it, but I really, when I'm raising, I want that soil in my raised bed to be as good as I can possibly get it, and I like to use at least a third compost, maybe a third topsoil, and a third of some other type of material, maybe a pine bark mulch or chips or something like that, and blend that together. But you do want it to be a light mix so that you're not just putting topsoil in there will not give you sufficient drainage and the fluffiness of the soil that you're really looking for. So I would definitely add amendments to it.
Yeah, I agree with Dave. And the local landscaping companies, larger ones, I guess I can't name any, but they'll sell what's called a garden mix. And that garden mix is 50% topsoil. And our topsoil is so heavy with clay, or it's just clay in many ways, mm-hmm. That it's really too heavy to be used in a raised bed. And we usually at the Civic Garden Center, we recommend when doing the box raised beds to not have them be wider than 4 feet so you comfortably reach into the center of it from each side. And then people do everything from 8 to 10 to 12 feet in length. After 12 feet in length, you have to start adding extra supports to keep them from bowing and so forth. But going back to the soil is that the blend I usually recommend is one-third shredded topsoil, and shredded is key here, one-third composted manure. And when you get it from the different companies, it'll be shredded horse manure, and then either mushroom compost, which is basically composted wood chips, or else for the third to use composted leaf mold, which is composted leaves. Either of those will work. But the thing that you really have to do, like that first, you know, if you do this in the spring, that next fall, you have to begin integrating compost back into that bed immediately, because it's really amazing. Like it'll turn into a block of clay within 2 or 3 years if you don't keep on it.
Tom's calling from Anderson. Hi, Tom.
Thanks for taking my call. How are you today?
I'm just fine.
My question, I have two raised beds, 4 foot by 16. And what I do is in the fall, I take all the compost I have, plus on top of that, any fresh stuff that I hasn't had time to compost at all. And I go ahead and fill it deeply into my beds. And I've never had any problem with that. Is there any issue with doing it that way?
I don't think so, because you're really incorporating that, your fresher material, with the soil and with the compost, and you're going to see rapid breakdown of it when you do that. And you might see a little bit of nitrogen tie up in the beginning of the year, but I seriously doubt that you'd have any problem. The one thing that I do wonder about is you're putting a tiller into your raised bed. we have just seen that overuse of tillers can actually create kind of a compaction layer. But so maybe every 2 or 3 years, you might want to use a broad fork or a spading fork and go down there pretty deep and turn that over by hand and then come back and possibly till. But other than that, I think you're right on track.
Are you using a small mantis tiller?
No, I'm using a very large tri-belt.
Oh, okay.
It's a chore to move that around.
Yeah, I was going to say.
But it works.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, like Dave said, is that, you know, when you run a tiller through soil, particularly if you're running it deep, you're just shredding the soil, and you're also cutting up earthworms and disrupting microbial life and fungi, and you're really in many ways doing more harm than good. One thing you can do in the fall is that you take a shovel and you can sort of dig in and kind of open the soil up a little bit without completely turning it over. And then add your organic matter on top of it. And during the course of the winter with freezing and thawing, it'll naturally churn and work this debris back down into your soil. It's good. And if you're adding leaves at the end of the year, if you can, at home, what we do is we run over them with a lawnmower or with a bag. And so we chop them up and take them in the bag. And if you take those leaves when they're in small pieces, they'll break down faster. And one thing I would recommend to people when they put leaves on top of their beds, if they're whole leaves, particularly larger leaves like sycamore, you know, they almost make like they'll like shingle up in layers, like shingles on a roof, and that they'll just sort of create this heavy mat that doesn't allow the soil to breathe, which is important for the soil to be able to do during the winter. So that's just something to consider.
Thank you very much for your call, Tom. We appreciate it. We go now to Joanne in Centerville. Hi, Joanne. What's your question?
Hi, how are you?
Just fine. What did you want to ask?
My question is, if you're not composting organic food scraps in your, you know, composting your regular kitchen waste, is there a concern about any pesticides or herbicides that may be left on the skins of these foods in your compost?
I don't think so. I think when you do compost it, you should be okay. But there's probably, I do think if you are going to try to be certified organic, there could be some issues there. But otherwise, if it's been through the composting process, I think all those should be removed. But if you wanted to be completely sure about it, you should probably only compost organic food scraps and things like that.
Yeah, I agree with Dave. I mean, if you're trying to be organically certified for a farm and stuff, they're not allowed to take that waste. But, you know, you keep in mind that the pesticides are applied at a farm and then they're washed before they're shipped out. Then you wash it again. And so though there's residual waste, and I do everything I can only to eat organic food, so obviously I'm sensitive to this. But this material goes through an incredible transformation during the composting process that – you know, I think in most cases, I mean, any kind of residual, I wouldn't overly concern, particularly if you think about it. If you're eating those vegetables to begin with, that's that. If you're totally only eating organic food and having waste brought onto your property or getting waste from other sources that aren't grown organically, then I would recommend not doing it.
Thanks so much for your call, Joanne. We appreciate it. Our number is 513-419-7100. Nick's calling from College Hill. Hi, Nick.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Just fine. What's your question?
Well, I've been doing composting for many, many years, and I was going to just kind of add in that I found that the kind of three-sided method that you mentioned works really well. I've noticed that throughout the year we get different types of yard scraps. Sometimes it's like brush and things. Other times it's leaves. Other times it's grass. So I allow my pile to build up over the course of the year. I also have my food scraps for my kitchen, and I work in a restaurant as well, so I bring home food scrap. But then as I get toward the top, I break the top layer off and start a new pile, break everything off the outside, and then turn the inside of the pile, because that's had a chance to go through the full composting process and all the different microorganisms that break it down. So I just kind of wanted to add that in, because I've been doing this in a small suburban area for quite a while, and there's no problem with odor or anything like that, no complaints from any neighbors. And my pile is probably about 5 foot in diameter, fenced in, and about 3 feet tall.
That's great. We all need to be more like you.
Mm-hmm. Thanks so much for your call. We really appreciate it, Nick.
Yeah. And, you know, one thing that comes up is with composting is a concern about odor and also rodents. And the one thing to remember, if you don't put anything that's protein, meat, dairy, I think, in it, then you're not going to really have those problems for the most part. And if you're actively turning it, if you're worried about something nesting, you've disrupted the nest and then it's no longer an issue.
Larry's calling from Mason. Hi, Larry. What's your question?
I was calling about a large area that I want to put down some turf, hydroseed versus sod. And it's a little bit over an acre I want to do this in.
Well, hydroseeding is going to probably be a lot less expensive than putting down sod. Sod, of course, gives you almost immediate, satisfaction because you're putting it down and, you know, within a matter of keeping it watered in a few weeks, you've got it pretty well rooted in. Hydroseeding is going to take a little bit longer and you're going to have to supplement with some watering as well and kind of, you know, really pamper that grass through the summer.
Does that answer your question, Larry?
Yeah. Is there a recommendation on what type of seed to go with for this area?
I definitely would go with one of the fine-leaved tall fescues. They're by far the best grass for us. And even in, a little bit further north of here, I still think that's the best choice for you.
Thanks so much for your call.
Guys.
We appreciate it. We did have a question from John who said, when is a good time to aerate your lawn?
You can aerate now. I usually do it in the fall, but, quite honestly, Marianne, a lot of athletic fields where they have compaction all the time, they aerate almost season long, and it can be really beneficial to that turf. The best aeration is if they go in and they actually pull a plug of soil out and bring it to the top of the surface. That just allows oxygen and moisture and even gets some fertilizer down into that root zone and can be really beneficial to do that. And I like aeration with the type of reseeding as well. It's a great combination of things to do.
Aeration is an interesting point to bring up about vegetable gardening too, because in the fall it's also good to do that. You could do it also in early spring using a broad fork or else a simple spading fork. And what you do is you just push the tines into the ground, rock it a little bit, and pull it straight out. So you're just putting these perforated holes. Like the gentleman that was talking about using the tiller inside his raised bed, that would be also something I would recommend to him.
You mentioned the idea of when you use a tiller, though, that you're cutting up the earthworms and all those sorts of things. Should you not till it? I mean, do earthworms grow back? I mean, I don't know.
Tillage is sometimes you have to till. If you're going to be seeding small seeded things such as carrots and things like that, you almost need a little bit finer seed bed, and a tiller will do that for you. But I think we've really been sold on the idea that you've got to use them all the time. And Peter and I have talked about this a good bit. And really, there's a tendency to overuse them. And you can develop a compacted layer. And you're really kind of breaking down that soil structure when you use them too much.
Yeah, and there is no-till techniques of gardening, both on a large-scale agricultural scale and then also for home gardening. And but it's kind of interesting. A lot of people who farm and garden, they love to work the soil. I hear people talk about composting is too much work. Well, a lot of people just really enjoy turning it. But the trick is not doing it too much. And if you are doing a tiller, you don't need to, push it down 5-6 inches into the ground. Because like you said, you hit your clay and then you're actually creating a burnished layer that will become almost impenetrable for water and you'll have trouble with drainage. You can just till the top, just till the top 1 to 2 inches. Because, that's where your active seed layer is. Plus, another disadvantage of deep tilling is that you're bringing up seeds that have been down there for 10, 20 years, and you're reintroducing them and getting them at the top of the surface, and they're going to grow. But by shallow tilling, and that's what a lot of people with lettuce crops and stuff, and the farmers and market gardeners I know do, is that primarily just a shallow tilling after the garden has been established.
We have a question about moss taking over areas in the lawn that won't allow grass to grow. How do you kill off the moss without hurting the lawn?
there are chemicals that you can use. Usually the moss is a really – it's just the environment. You've got shade and you've probably got a pretty wet area as well. So you're going to have moss to grow. And really before – you know, until you can correct that situation, the moss is going to come back. But there are – there is a chemical. There's a lot of copper sulfate derivatives that they sell for that purpose, and you can get those. But again – I think you're going to have a return to moss is because you've just got a perfect environment for it. So you get to change that a little bit, open it up to some sunshine or drain it a little bit better, and you'll have a lot better success.
Well, the community garden development training program that we do, training people to make community gardens, we always tell them don't fight the site. You know, and if you have an area where moss is growing, you know, why not have a moss garden? I mean, it can be an accent for your yard landscape-wise.
How do you make it look nice, though? I mean, some people see that and just kind of go, ew, ick, it's, you know, getting mildew or moldy or looks bad.
Well, you can – I mean, if you think about – I mean, if you think the tradition of Japanese gardening, there's – you know, it's into it even with the people doing the bonsai trees. And most people will do this with some kind of rock formation or altered landscape using stone and stuff, and where then the moss grows in between the cracks of the stone. And even depending on what your situation is, by putting a stone path possibly through there and letting that just form itself in between the stones itself could be a nice – I mean, I know people that try and actively develop it. You know, they do things like pour milk in an area and things like that.
Oh, my.
You actually – I think some of the recommendations, you take moss and buttermilk in a blender and you coat it. But there
or
are
they
actually –
just go to these other people's houses and pull
through. And there are companies – mail order that will ship moss to you.
Robert's calling from Milford. Hi, Robert. What's your question?
Hi. I have a half acre of good topsoil, and I haven't developed it for a garden yet. But should I let it lie fallow and brush grow, or should I try to till it in the meantime?
I definitely don't let it go fallow. Or I would.
What does fallow mean?
Well, he's just letting the ground rest. But I would definitely put some sort of a crop on there, be it a legume or some sort of a cover crop, so that you know, most of the new research is saying don't ever let your ground just lie there with nothing growing on it. And we've got legumes that'll of course add nitrogen. They're beneficial for insects, and also when you put those back into the soil, you're going to add organic matter. So if you're not going to put a vegetable garden in it, I would definitely put some sort of a cover crop on it.
Yeah, and if you're thinking about eventually putting it into production for, you know, fruits and vegetables, I don't know if it's listed in grass right now, but the one thing I would do is get out there and pull out every seedling that you can, and then to introduce it into a cover crop. Like you can do a summer cover, and they have these people are experimenting now with what's called a cocktail mix. Mm-hmm. And so that would be a mixture of herbaceous, grass, and then legumes. And actually, Holly at the Hamilton County Soil and Water District, Conservation District, they have a very active program in terms of seed distribution and education programs and classes. And I would really strongly suggest contacting them. They've done a lot of literature. And this summer, I'm going to be using a summer cocktail mix, and I've been using them as an overwinter crop for many years now, and it's highly effective. But I would definitely get that in cover and green manure crops as soon as you can.
It's great for your soil, and it's great for the beneficial insects and the bees and all that. So I would definitely cover it.
Robert, thanks so much for your phone call. We go now to Susan in Dayton. Hi, Susan. What's your question?
I have iris coming up. And I'm told that I should put a product called 7 on it to keep the borers from killing the plants. But I have dogs running around and kids running around, and I really don't want a caustic chemical something or other put on it. So I wondered if there was anything that was more organic and safer in any way that I could use.
One thing about the 7 is that it's timing is everything with it. And I do not think you're doing that now with the 7. It's usually a dust, and it's you're trying to get the moth, the female moth that's in there coming to lay eggs. And so it's the iris borer B-O-R-E-R is what you're trying to combat. And I think if you look up some information online, you'll find out the timing of it. And there are definitely going to be some organic alternatives that you might be able to use for that. And, you know, you can really tell when they're in the iris fan or the leaf there, they can do quite a bit of damage. But I think I would look that up a little bit more to make sure that, you know, the timing of the application of the 7 or organic insecticide is just when you need it.
Thanks so much for your call, Susan. Our number, 513-419-7100, if you have a question or a comment. David's calling from Oxford. Hi, David.
Hi.
What's your question?
Well, I had heard someplace that shredded newspaper makes a good compost. And I also had one other problem. I was wondering if there is such a thing as a good way to get rid of moles out of the lawn.
Oh, well, shredded paper can be integrated into your compost. But I also – I wonder if you're also referring to the idea of using it for mulch. And I don't recommend it for mulch because it kind of – way it mats together again, it makes creates a kind of a barrier. And this, people are concerned about the ink, but the inks now are soy-based. Although, you know, different the bleaching process of the paper, you know, some people are concerned about. But I think if you're just trying to recycle, it's – you know, it's fine to use it in limited quantities. In terms of the moles, I have a position on that that's not very popular. Just leave them alone. All they're doing is aerating your soil. Groundhogs, that's something different. But moles, I don't really concern myself with.
You know, they used to think that by controlling the moles' diet, which is earthworms and grubs, you could control the moles, and that just does not work. And so, chemicals to treat moles are not effective. Trapping seems to there's not as many moles in your yard as you think they are, because one mole can just do a lot of damage. So trapping is actually pretty effective. But I can't tell you the number of people I have talked to recently who've got a dog that is really good at extracting moles, and they watch for that soil to move, and they just come right in and pull that mole out, and he doesn't last long once he's on the surface.
Thanks for your call, David. We appreciate it. We haven't had much chance to talk about insects. Has the winter killed a lot of insects off, or are we going to see a lot of problems again this year?
You know, I've got that question a whole lot. And also, not knowing the answer, I talked to an entomologist, and he said, well, most likely we will see less of insect pests. But it can also go the other way, that how the predatory insects on some of our negative ones, if they had it tough and there's not as many predators left, we could see, you know, population of some of these things actually go up.
Joe's calling from Montgomery. Hi, Joe. What's your question?
Hi. I have an answer, by the way, for the moles. I used a product that I don't remember the name of it, but the main ingredient is cod liver oil, and you just attach it to your hose. It mixes with water. It's harmless to the environment. It's harmless to pets, and I don't have any more moles.
Yeah.
And my question is about what's the best – isn't this – you were talking about how to prepare the lawn and garden for the spring and summer, et cetera, now that we're hopefully getting this good weather. What about a soil test? What's the best way to do that? And I have a follow-up question.
Well, in Kentucky, just you bring in a pint of soil of and the soil should be representative of the soil that's either in your garden or in your lawn or in your landscape. Go to four or five different areas, go down about 4 inches deep, take a core of soil out, let it air dry, and bring a pint of that to your county extension office. And that's just the best way to do it. If you've got a problem area, I would soil sample that, separately from the others.
Yeah, in Cincinnati and Hamilton County, the Hamilton County Soil and Water Conservation District has a program where you can, for $5, you can get a kit that, and it tells you how to take the test, and then gives you a little box and a bag, and you send it off and you get the test. And then you can also follow up with them on, you know, how to interpret the test.
Joe, you said you had a follow-up?
That was the Hamilton County Soil and Water Conservation District?
Yes.
Boy, that's a mouthful.
Yes.
The follow-up question is for as far as lawns go, is the most important part of the test the pH? Because I know when you need to lower the pH, you add lime, correct?
Yes, Hello? That is correct. I'm sorry. That is
and
correct.
If you need to raise the pH, what do you use?
You're using you're using if you're raising the pH, you're adding lime. If you want to lower it, you're adding sulfur. If you want to make it more acidic, sulfur. If you want to make it more basic, but do not do either one without the benefit of a soil test, because it will tell you exactly where your pH is. And it is definitely one of the most important parts of your soil sample, as well as it'll give you phosphorus and potassium levels as well, and organic matter.
Joe, thanks for your call. We appreciate it. Rob's calling from Loveland. Hi, Rob.
Hi, how are you?
Just good. What's your question?
Good. I had a question. What do you guys think is the best way to keep out little critters from your vegetable gardens, say, such as rabbits? They just destroyed beans like crazy.
Yeah. With rabbits and groundhogs, you know, you can get away with lower fencing. And I don't know if your garden is fenced in with a conventional, like, welded wire fence or woven wire fence. What you can do is use the chicken wire, that's the one-inch mesh. And what you do is you apply it to the outside of the fence, and then you take 2 feet out on the ground. You flare it out and let it sit flat on the ground. And often when I'm installing, what I'll do is take a tiller and run it around the outside of the fence and then rake back with a garden rake the soil and loose turf, and then push the chicken wire in and then pile that turf and soil back on top, and before long it grows. And that chicken wire then is embedded underneath the turf, so you can mow over it, weed whip it, anything you want. But then you need to have at least 2 feet of chicken wire going up. And I found that to be pretty much 100% effective for groundhogs and rabbits.
What if you're trying to do something as an alternative to like the more expensive stuff like deer scram or rabbit scram?
It just depends on where you are. We've had really good luck with some solar powered electric fences, but obviously in a neighborhood, that's not a real good idea. Those repellents are all good. There's just a lot of things on the market that are fairly effective, but you really got to try a number of things.
All right, Rob, thanks so much for your call. We appreciate it. Try to get one more in here. This is Ken in Villa Hills. Hi, Ken.
Hi. Is there any way to eradicate Bermuda grass without using a kill-everything product like Roundup?
30 seconds.
Well, what some people have done is tried to cook it out by putting a black plastic over the top of it and cutting off the sunlight and making it so hot under there that it will work.
But we're out of time. All right. Well, we're going to have you guys back again soon because we obviously can't get to all the questions in time. Thanks so much for being here today.
Thank you.
We've been talking about your lawns and gardens with Campbell County Horticulture Extension Agent David Kester and Peter Huttinger, Neighborhood Garden Coordinator with the Civic Garden Center of Greater Cincinnati. Producer for today's program was Pete Reitmeier. Today's technical director was Rick Andres. Our engineering staff is Don Danko, Bill Dean, and Mike McEnich. We also had help today from Kevin Reynolds. Archives of our program are available on our website, wvxu.org. I'm Marianne Zalesnik.